glad you're enjoying your midday with the best midday sports show in the state of Utah. It's the Bill Riley Show, presented by Shields on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
Day away from the NBA draft. Many, many days away from the start of the college basketball season. But we'll talk some draft. We'll talk some college hoops and other stuff. Who knows what'll come up. Running to Utes head coach Larry Krestowiak with us here in studio today. How are you? How's your summer?
It's great. Yeah, so it didn't take long for it to hit 100 around here.
Gosh,
so
we go from 0 to 100 in about a blink of an eye.
Yeah, yeah. We're happy. Our camps went well. Finished up elite camp on Monday. And our guys are all in school. We'd started summer school today for everybody. So we've got Donnie and Pop, and Justin came in over the weekend. He's finishing up classes in Long Beach. So tomorrow morning, 7 a.m., will be our first practice with everyone other than Justin, but it'll be kind of nice. The guys are doing a really good job.
Yeah, I've seen some of the social media stuff about the guys doing their conditioning stuff and seeing them out running. And then I think I saw a video clip of Chris Seely on the CO2 oxygen thing, running on the treadmill and things like that. It's got to be nice just to know you've got, you know, when Justin finally gets here, you'll have everybody on campus and you know, you have them under your own wings and you get to kind of put them through the paces. And then you know that you've got coming up in a month and a half, you're going to be able to take them as a group overseas and play in that tournament and get some good quality time together.
It's a really good group to work with. We've got a lot of special characters, I think, on the team, some high character guys. You know, certain individuals are taking it upon themselves. This is a little bit of a slow time per NCAA rules where you only get 2 hours a week to practice. But Coach Rock's got them for 6 hours, and guys are getting bigger. We've kind of sent out the memo after last season that we needed to get bigger. You know, we needed to look the part, and you add a guy like Donnie Tillman and Pop, and, you know, we still have a couple open scholarships this year, so we're hopeful that we can get some news moving forward. But you know, Jace Johnson's getting bigger. Tyler Rawson's had one of the best springs. He's really focused. You know, guys are putting on weight and doing a nice job. So that's, again, it's a great group. And then you can't put any value on a foreign tour like that where you've got 10 days abroad. And beyond the 10 days abroad, you've got 10 practice days prior to that. So it's really going to give us a little bit of a jump start, and our guys are fresh and ready to go.
Talk about that tour in a few minutes. You mentioned you guys get 2 hours a week with them on the floor in practice setting. But this year, and I'm going to ask, last year you had so many new faces. This year, it's kind of the opposite. Most all those guys are back from a year ago. Is it easier? You guys only get 2 hours a week, but because you've got much of that core back, they can kind of police themselves and practice together. And you know, they've all been through a season of you or a season and a half of you, so they know what's expected. So Dave Collette and Jace Johnson and Cedric Bearfield and, you know, some of these, Tyler Rawson, can all kind of marshal the new kids and kind of run things themselves? Is that what you hope them to do?
There's no question. You know, we have four seniors, Gabe Beeler being one of those seniors as well. But, you know, I've always thought, we call them captain's practices, you know, some of that leadership that you just mentioned is trying to get some guys in the gym. They know what it is we need to do. So if you can get a group of guys that really care, you know, I know our football program's doing the same thing with some early morning workouts. You know, if you have rules, it's not that we're trying to break those rules, but if guys really care, if you think about it, 2 hours a week with coaches is not much. And they know a lot of those drills. They're going in and implementing them. But, you know, I think, Bill, the biggest thing is, you know, we have a pretty good plan set out for everybody other than Donnie, Pop, and Justin. We're going to have Justin for a year, and we've got plenty of data to know his strengths and weaknesses. But that's always the biggest point. You know, they say you always see your own warts. You always know your own deficiencies better. And we've laid out a plan for every one of our guys to know this is what we need to address. And we're light years ahead in terms of, you know, compared to last year where you've got so many new bodies. You're trying to simulate everybody into a practice setting. You're trying to figure out what it is you need to work on, not to mention, you know, all the off the court stuff that goes on and the responsibilities and culture that we have within the program. So I think as coaches, we all feel that we can take a little, you know, a, a breath of fresh air. We understand each other real well, and we have a plan, and there's a sense of familiarity with a lot of things. And I think that just allows you to move forward, you know, to more basketball specific issues. And, you know, it's one of those years where I feel really comfortable. And as I said, Donnie and Pop will be two guys that we need to kind of dissect and figure out where to go. But those are two kids that were in our gym last night from 8 until 12:30, you know, that, I got a text afterwards. Thanks for the opportunity, Coach. It was their first day here.
Yeah.
And they're cut of the right stuff, and they're going to fit right in with this group, and maybe even give us some freshman leadership.
I've talked to you and Andy Hill about both those guys, Donnie Tillman and Christian Papula Pop, who you got late, and Donnie was a commit for you guys for a while. But Justin Bibbins, a transfer from Long Beach State, graduate transfer. He's got 1 year to play for you. How did you know that? That's interesting. You recruited those other guys for a while, but how do you kind of connect with a guy that's a graduate transfer, and you know, going? I guess a little easier to evaluate him because you've seen him play for 2 or 3 years, so you have an idea that he can play. But how do you make that connection with that? Is that you reaching out to him, him reaching out to you? How do those with graduate transfers? You know, you're not going on the AAU circuit. You're not calling his high school coach. So how do you connect with a guy like Justin?
Well, you know, one of the things is there is some history with Justin in our program. He was a kid that we recruited out of high school, and we didn't have a spot for him because we had a kid on our team named Brandon Taylor.
Right.
And he had considered walking on here. You know, I can remember specifically the meeting and just saying, you know, I don't know that we can guarantee you a scholarship. We'd love to have you as a walk-on in the program. He loved a lot of what we were doing and saw himself fitting in the program. So it kind of came full circle. He finished up his degree. I think he's always wanted to be a part of the Pac-12. And, you know, once the legwork was done in terms of he and Long Beach and Coach Munson, you know, going through that process of him being a graduate transfer, you know, it contact was made by them that we were interested. And then you look at our roster,
Lorenzo position, leaving. Yeah.
We had a need with the point guard, with Lorenzo being one of our seniors. And, you know, if you look at Justin, some of the games he's played in college, Long Beach State plays one of the hardest preseason schedules you can find. And so he's been in a lot of those arenas and, you know, played some reps, and he was a heck of a player in that conference. And we, you know, a little bit like Jared Dubois when he came from Loyola Marymount. He's ready to dial it all in and try to have a great finish to his collegiate career, and we're certainly going to try to provide that for him.
And he is what you would call a true point guard. He's, what, 5'8"?
Yeah.
He kind of ran the show for Long Beach for 3 years?
Yeah, you know, and I don't even know if he's 5'8", to be honest with you. I've never had a problem with small point guards. I've always said that you know, Brandon Taylor always thought he was 7 feet tall and has a little moxie about him and swagger. So, you know, I know one thing, it's hard for me to keep a guy that little in front of me. So it poses another problem, assuming we can defend and rebound those positions. And I know Justin's really got his heart set on defending, and he does a nice job with that. So I like where we're going with him.
From what you've been able to tell from the conditioning and things, who's really kind of upped their game from a physicality standpoint from the end of the season till now? Is there somebody you've seen a definitive body change or physicality change or something in from April till now? Somebody that's really gotten after it in the weight room and conditioning?
Well, I think Jace Johnson's body has changed. Tyler Rawson's body has changed. I think Dave Collette's done a nice job. A guy that the fans in Utah aren't even familiar with is Big Chris Seeley,
who
spent all of last year injured and going through some hardships medically. But, you know, he looks the part. He doesn't like it, but I always call him Jordan Bell from Oregon.
He should like that because Jordan Bell's going to be a draft pick tomorrow.
Yeah, he doesn't like that. He's let it be known that he doesn't like it when I call him, but you know, kind of a raw freshman coming in, worked really hard on his body, energy guy. That hopefully that's where Chris goes. But he's a guy that is seeing some bumps on his arms and legs that he hasn't otherwise seen. I think Cedric's pretty well fit. Parker's fit. Gabe Beeler's a guy when he left here in the spring. You know, we talked about as a small forward, he spent a fair amount of time on the ground getting banged around here by Jordan and then Devin. And he went home and hit. If you see him right now, it's a notable difference. He's over 200 pounds, and So I'm very appreciative of all the guys and Coach Rock kind of heading it up. That the weight room is not the only factor, but it certainly has been a factor for us to be able to be as physical as some of those other players. But there's really not a guy that should be called out in how they've done a great job. It's been kind of a collective group effort, and everybody is, for the most part, if you're not gaining weight, they are getting stronger. And so I'm real happy with where we're headed.
Let's talk about Jace Johnson for a second, because depending on who you talk to, some people would say that they weren't as happy with Jace last year. Maybe they had higher expectations, fans, that is. And maybe that's because he came in early, his senior year of high school, graduated early, sat out, I think people. And his ranking coming out of high school, some of that plays in there too. But I saw a guy that was a freshman that had tons of energy, that I thought got better as the year went along. In a game where you guys didn't necessarily play great in Eugene, I thought he was one of the best players on the floor against a very good Oregon team, against Boucher and Bell. He had 14 and 12, I think, that night. But how did Jace come along as a freshman for you? And as a guy that's a big guy and has coached big guys, where do you kind of see his development from year one, which was last year, coming into year two?
Well, it's light years. You know, I've had extensive meetings with Jace, trying to come up with the game plan, in family, you know, dynamic too, mom and dad. We've sat down and talked. I do think you hit one of the main words is there's a lot of expectations when you have a number of stars behind your name, and you, you know, the transition from a high school senior to a freshman in college is pretty significant.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he came in at Christmas time. There was talk about maybe us throwing him in the fire, but, you know, I think he realized there's just a lot of coaching that takes place in those early fall months, and so we would have been asking too much for him. But I can tell you right now, I'm as optimistic and upbeat about Jace's progress, and I think it was a little bit of a learning curve for him to figure out, you know, these are some of the things. We've talked about a process with him that you trust. I mean, we can talk, I'm sure we're going to talk about Kyle Kuzma.
Oh, yeah.
But there's some similarities with, you know, weight room, conditioning, just knowing what you know, coming in as a second-year player and being comfortable. And that's one of the biggest things, I think, is, you know, a lot of the unknown is taken care of now. We've got a list of things for Jace to work on. And He's as good a rebounder and position defender as we're going to have in the league. And, you know, for a 7-footer, I've said this many times, a lot of times a 7-footer is playing the game because a lot of other people are suggesting he plays the game. And
right.
He has a true passion. He loves the game, and he wants to be as good as he possibly can. And we made it through kind of a period of adversity. There were some ups and downs throughout last year, and he's steadfast with the plan. And don't be surprised if you see some big jumps, but there's a list of hundreds of players who played far less than Jace did even as a freshman that are NBA draft picks. So it's just a matter of kind of settling into that role, and he's going to be on the floor, I would guess, significantly more than he was a year ago. And he's bringing some leadership to our situation as well. So I think some great things are going to happen, and you're always going to have those expectations, and people are going to think that somebody, but, you know, taking that next step, it's the same thing we're talking about with a lot of these guys on the draft board.
Yeah.
This is going to be the last time that they feel like they're at the top of that pecking order, and then all of a sudden you get drafted and you go into another realm, which the game speeds up, is far, far more physical, and it's kind of a rite of passage that you have to pay your dues and be initiated a little bit.
Is the big guy, is the because Jace is a true center, is that the toughest position to assimilate into as a freshman in your experience, or is there one on the floor that may be a little bit more difficult? It just seems like sometimes as a true freshman big man, you're arms and legs and maybe a little skinnier than you need to be as a freshman, and you're going up against, in a conference like the Pac-12 sometimes, men, big guys, big bodies, or is there another position that you might say is a tougher to assimilate into?
Well,
as a freshman?
I don't think it's easy for any freshman, you know, to make the move. Certainly, that's one of the things you notice with the game is the speed takes a huge step from high school to college, and then the size and strength takes a big step. And obviously, if you're a center, you're in the middle of that strength category, and you're kind of patrolling the paint and it's a little more difficult to maybe get into. You know, you put a ball in someone's hands, Lonzo Ball's hands, and different things. He doesn't necessarily have to get banged around and beat up as much, but he's kind of seeing the whole floor. So I would think that's a safe analogy to think that the bigger you are, the harder it is to adjust. But, you know, he's on a great path. He's in a good place mentally. Our guys, they know the rim is protected behind him, and he really is per minute. He's one of the best rebounders, I think, for a big man. He's got a great nose to go get the basketball, and we're really excited about his future.
It's funny. You used a term with me last year when we were talking about Jace that I don't think people think of a lot, but you told me he rebounds outside his area well. And explain what that means, because some big guys will rebound right at the rim. I mean, Jakob seemed to be a vacuum cleaner. Anything that was around the rim, he would go get. But you mentioned to me last year, Jace will rebound outside of his area.
Well, a lot of times a big is kind of locked up with their own man, and if the rebound doesn't come within your little radius, you're not going to get it. And I think something that's hard to coach, Jakob had that. I think Jace has it, where he sees where the ball's coming, the angle of it, and does a nice job of pursuing it, you know, and it's difficult. I think his center of, you know, he's not being pushed around as much, so he's able to hit some guys now, clear out some space for himself, and not be tangled up with somebody, and he's able to go get it. So he's got good instincts to rebound, you know, tough-minded. And then, you know, with the height of his elbows, if he gets out and plays wide, we always talk about putting his thumbs in his ears and making yourself bigger. A lot of those other people don't want to mess with the elbow that's coming at your nose level.
You went to Brazil 4 years ago. Now you're coming and going to Europe this year, and you're integrating a couple of new players, two or three new players, but a core of guys coming back. Did you notice after that Brazil trip a big help for your group, and how much of a help do you think playing against top-level competition in Spain and France is going to help you this year?
Yeah, I think there's great value with, you know, with the 10 days of practice, the basketball. You know, you can't get too carried away, but you get kind of the foundation of what you expect basketball-wise. And you can get that done in 3 weeks, basically, the 10 days prior and the 10 days over there. We'll play three high-quality games while we're there. You know, our staff was probably the biggest benefactor 4 years ago when we went to Brazil. It really helped us kind of grow and come together. This is, I think, going to be an opportunity for our players more than anything. Our staff's been pretty much intact the entire time. But I think the biggest benefit of it is, and I'm going to get creative with our staff, and we're going to do some team building, get to know each other kind of thing. And it's like anything. Whenever you take a trip for 10 days, you know, there's a lot of idle time and a lot of travel, a lot of buses, a lot of planes. You just automatically going to propel yourself further down that timeline in terms of a familiarity with each other. And I know the new guys are open to this. Even the last week, our new guys are somewhat in with our guys already. It's a group. We don't have a lot of cliques, you know, a group of three, but we do things collectively. So, you know, trust factor and culture building off the court is going to be invaluable, along with the basketball, and the timing couldn't be more perfect in my mind. And we put it off. We had an opportunity to go a year ago. With some of the things that were going on around the world and the station that our team was in, kind of the newness of it, and we didn't have some guys signed, just didn't seem like the right time. I'm glad we put it off till this year, because I think the timing is perfect.
We'll talk about the trip a little bit more. The NBA draft is tomorrow. Coach has a guy that's trying to make it three straight years for Utes in the draft, and he had mentioned, too, there's still a couple of open scholarships, so where are they on some late recruiting? We'll get to all that before the top of the hour. Coach in studio with us. Today's show and every show presented by Shields, here on your home of the Utes, ESPN 700.
Yourself heard on the Bill Riley Show. Call in at 877-353-0700 or on Twitter at ESPN700Bill. Now let's get back to the Bill Riley Show, presented by Shields, on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
Larry Kay in studio with us on the eve of the NBA draft. 30 years ago in the NBA draft, he thought he was a trailblazer. You want to tell the story? I think you've told it before, but you got the guarantee the night before, didn't you?
Yeah, I had the kiss of death from the Trailblazers. The GM called me the night before the draft and said, and I hadn't heard from many. The agents were solely responsible at that point, but said, we want you to sleep really well. I remember him telling me, sleep real well tonight, because at the worst case scenario, we're going to take you with the 24th pick. And at the time, there were 24 teams in the league and first round pick. So I was excited. My brother rented a hot tub for the backyard, and we moved in a couple TVs and invited a few more friends. And I'll never forget it, watching 24th pick, the Portland Trail Blazers select Arvydas Sabonis. And so there's a little bit of a letdown. 25, 26, 27 were on air.
Yeah.
And then ESPN. Coverage went off, and I hadn't been picked yet. So it was a little bit of a downer. And then I got a phone call from Chicago just a few minutes later, and I was drafted by the Bulls, which was unbelievable, because that's the Michael Jordan era. I was happy about that. Did a couple interviews with Chicago media, and 2 hours later was traded to Portland, where it all started. And so then I was excited, because being from Montana, I could play in Portland, and you had the Kersey and all the things happening with the Trailblazers. And so I let about a week go by. I hadn't heard from anybody from Portland, which I thought was odd, and I was trying to make my summer plan. So I called the Portland Trailblazers and didn't even get through to an actual person that worked for the organization. But the secretary that answered the phone said, she said, give me about 5 minutes. She came back and she said, no, we've actually traded you to San Antonio, but it's not going to be announced for another week. So I thought, man, you talk about a welcome to the professional ranks. And, makes me kind of giggle when you see all the mock drafts, right, and all the people and, the different people around the world. Once you get to that next level, you don't have a whole lot of control.
Could you even imagine today, because you've been in that league, you draft a kid first or second round, you're on the phone with them, you've got their cell number, you're texting them, you've got them into your place a day, maybe 2 days later, you've put them through the process, then they're in summer league a couple of days later. You went a week and didn't hear a word from the Blazers.
No, it's completely changed. I flew around most of the spring. They had a great event in Hawaii that was the Aloha Classic, and they brought about the top 48 possible NBA guys. And that was back in the day when everybody went.
Yeah.
You had all the top players, and we went to Hawaii, flew around different islands. I remember there was so much rain, they canceled a bunch of our games because the ceilings were leaking. But we were at the Chicago pre-draft camp and all. So everybody was real familiar. You did all your interviews at those settings. But it certainly wasn't like it is today.
So 2 years ago, DeLon Wright goes in the first round of the Raptors. Last year, Jakob Poeltl goes, and he's a Raptor too. And this year you got Kuz. And Kuz made the decision to bet on himself, come out early. Apparently, by all reports, workouts and things have all gone well. He's impressed some people. He's kind of gone from being maybe he'll get drafted to we've got a pretty good feeling he'll be – we don't know where, but we've got a pretty good feeling his name's going to be called tomorrow night. Have you chatted or texted with him recently? And I know I texted with him yesterday. He's just anxious. He told me, I'm just anxious. He's going to be in Flint with his family watching it.
Yeah.
But it's great for you. It's a feather in your cap. Looks like three straight years somebody going in the draft.
Well, that's a kind of a side result. It's nothing, it's great to be a part of, but it's really great for Kuz. That's the thing, is it gives you goosebumps when I can remember the first time I watched him play on the East Coast was there watching another recruit that we had. And I called DeMarlo right after the game. I said, hey, there's this 6'8 skinny kid that's standing out here shooting threes, that's got a high skill level, seems like a good kid. Let's do whatever we can to get him. And 4 years later, to have all this come to fruition is pretty neat. And when we talk about the process to get to the NBA, that's a kid. I mean, I was hard on that kid. He's academic redshirt the first year, so he didn't practice or play. Just kind of got his feet wet, proved to the NCAA that he was a capable student, and then his first year of playing with us was hard. I just knew something was in there. We needed to get him to play harder and get more engaged. And so, you know, he might have been my favorite whipping boy, so to speak, and was one of those guys that stuck with it. Unlike, you know, some kids come in the spring and talk about, hey, you know, I'm going to move on to another school. I'll never forget, you know, when you talk about forming a bond and getting in a foxhole with a kid, when they come in and say, you know, I'm in, I trust you guys. It hasn't been easy, but I'm in. And, you know, it's easy to cheer for a guy like that. And then obviously got a lot better his second year, and his third year put himself in an all-league position to win that award, and could have come back and probably be talked about next year in the lottery. But everything has really worked out for him, and we're all extremely happy.
You had to have known, though, there was something about his personality that was going to allow you to coach him hard. Not all kids are created equal, and you coach kids pretty hard. But you're right. I mean, you were pretty hard on Kyle at different times, but he took it. Was there something you knew about his personality, or you could tell about him that knew, hey, I could be tough on this kid. He'll be able to take it and react well.
Yeah, some coaches, I think, are pretty vanilla and just, you know, express their personality and expect everybody to conform to them. It's different. A lot of my frustration with Kyle was effort, you know, and I guess maybe some of it's just a little envy that I can flash back to think I would have given anything to have in his frame and his body, but yeah. He wasn't playing hard enough. And I was probably on the flip side where obviously I was blessed to be 6'10". You know, but I had 6'6" wingspan. I remember when everybody said, there's no way he can play in the NBA. So he had a lot of length and,
sure.
You know, a little charisma about him. He worked, he was a gym rat, but he wasn't playing hard enough early on. I think that's what we got him to do more, you know, and I didn't have to coach him at all hardly last year because he understood it. And once that process takes place, you kind of set guys free. And that was the case for him. You know, Kyle grew up, it was a tough deal, grew up with his mom. Didn't have, you know, a typical childhood to where he had great, you know, support from a father, and I could relate to that. And basketball was our outlet, and I always promised Kyle that I was going to try to take on that role. And so I probably coached him as hard as I would my own kids.
Right.
You know, and that's the thing, making that connection. And he came in and he said he didn't mind. You know, it wasn't easy, but he wanted me to stay hard on him and keep pushing his buttons.
You mentioned something a minute ago that I want to go back to. You said you were back east watching somebody, and then you found or you saw Kyle, and he mm-hmm. caught your eye.
Mm-hmm.
I can recall you and some of your assistants telling me that a number of that does that happen quite a bit, where you're going to see one kid and another kid catches your eye? I remember Andy telling me when he saw Jakob Poeltl playing over in the European Championships or whatever it was. He was just there in Jen, and then he caught this kind of big Austrian kid. He wasn't necessarily there to see him. And I've had you tell me before, you've gone in, and it may have been Brandon Taylor, that when you went, you were there to watch, and there were some kids there, but you said he caught your eye because of the way he warmed up and the way he handled himself in the layup line, even outside the game. Does that happen quite a bit in recruiting? You're going to see one kid and another kid catches your eye?
Well, I think it does. You know, the days are rare when you're going. The situation with Kuzma, I was on the East Coast specifically to, I think it was Ahmad Fields.
Okay, I remember Ahmad.
And so I was watching him, and you have one game that you can watch. So it's pretty rare when you're going to a high school game and somebody on the other team catches your attention.
Right.
It's pretty slim chance of that happening. So much of what we do in recruiting now is an event like Andy talked about overseas, where it's one game after the other, or what we're about to step into in July, where you have 3 5-day periods, live periods. The first game of the day is at 8, and the last one ends at 10 p.m. So you're watching a lot of basketball, and that's the thing. You just kind of keep your eyes open. But what I noticed with the Brandon and with the Kyle, too, was after the game. You know, that's the one thing. I watch them warm up. You watch them interact during the game, and you watch them after the game. And, you know, are they one of those guys that's kind of on an island aloof, or, you know, how's he, is he coming in looking like he's distracted with a lot of other things, or does he have some tunnel vision? And I just remember Kuz's interaction with people after the game, you know, looking people in the eye. And in Brandon's case was, I thought, is this kid like he's the Pied Piper, had everybody following him, all walks of life. And he did the same thing when he got to Utah. You know, touched a lot of young kids, older people, just made a connection in the community. And I think I think what happens with me is my association with a lot of successful people that have played at the highest level, you start to see some of these correlations with how people act, you know, not just when they're on the court, but off the court. And there's a lot of successful people that have those traits, and I think that's what we try to seek out a little bit.
You mentioned early you've got a couple of spots open if you can fill them. You've also said repeatedly to me, you're not just going to fill them. You're going to find if the right guy is there, you'll fill that slot. If not, you'll hold it until you find the right guy. How tough is it at this time of year, and is there still a possibility of adding a player or maybe two by the time you head to Europe or by fall?
You know, I'm doing a lot of hoping and praying, and fingers are crossed right now. We're involved with someone, and we're dating, I guess, when I said I was involved with someone. That'll make us, you know, we'll really improve our team, you know, and I'm hopeful that that happens. And I'm also understanding that we've got a great group right now, and we're going to have a different combination of guys, and we can make it work. I just think we'll be better. You know, other than this one individual, there might be a couple things that we're still active with, but we're taking a good hard look at what we have. We get in, you know, we have four seniors, but also in 2 years, we'll have two kids returning from a mission. So on paper, you have four seniors, but a year from now, you're going to need two more scholarships. So we want to, you know, trying to piece it all together. The board's pretty extensive at the office. It goes out a little bit further than a lot of places when you're dealing with the missions. And, you know, I'm hopeful we can get this young man. Maybe we'll get some good news in the next couple days, and then we can head off into July. And, well, actually, next week I'm hoping to take a vacation. It'd be great news to head on a vacation with.
We'll take our final time out. We'll come back. The schedule's got to be just around the corner, too. We'll get an update on that. We'll talk a little bit about the draft. A lot of guys Larry's coached against for a year, two, or three are going to have their names called tomorrow night. A lot of guys that Utah's played against. We'll talk about some of those guys and get his thoughts on the NBA. Mm. His buddy Steve Kerr got another NBA championship. We'll get to all that coming up before 2 here on the Bill Riley Show on ESPN 700.
Give Bill your thoughts by sending a tweet at ESPN 700 Bill. Make yourself heard. Now back to the Bill Riley Show presented by Shields on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
Coach in studio for a few more minutes. Got a lot of guys in tomorrow night's draft that you coached against. Markel Fultz, you only saw once. He missed the second game. Lonzo Ball near the top of the draft. Trying to go down the line.
Markkanen,
who you coached against. Kennard from Duke probably had his first breakout game of his career against you guys in the Garden. He was really Grayson Allen didn't do a whole lot that day, but Luke Kennard, I remember, got to the free throw line about 18 times against you. He's a guy right there. A guy you recruited, Zach Collins, kid that was at Gonzaga.
Well, we recruited Markkanen.
Yeah, and you recruited Markkanen as well.
Two schools.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of the same thing with Collins, but he's a top 10 guy, and
Then
there's a lot of guys. So TJ Leaf, he's going probably going to be a first round guy. Ivan Rabb, likely to be a first round guy. Jordan Bell, probably a first round guy too. So there's a number of guys. It's good not to have to see those guys anymore.
Yeah, there's just one guy on that list that I wouldn't mind having for another year, and that's Kuz.
Yeah, having Kuz back another year would be nice.
It's pretty neat, you know. It's I think it's foregone conclusion that the Pac-12 will probably have more players than any other conference. It's happened a handful of times. In 6 years, I think it's happened half the time. So it's fun to be a part of a league like that, you know, and playing against the best players. We've talked about it a lot. It's fun to coach in the league. It's fun for you to do games the league, and you stay tied in. I don't know. I was really excited about DeLon's draft. Jakob's draft. I'm equally as excited about Kuz's, but I don't know if there's ever been a draft that's got as much depth to it and uncertainty. And, you know, I'm just keeping my fingers crossed Kuz ends up in a good spot. I've got my ideas where he's going to be, which I have to take an oath to secrecy on. But be nice to have somebody in, you know, two of our guys are about as far away from here as you can get.
Right.
So it'd be nice if we could get one in the Western Conference.
Well, by the way, DeLon is back here this week to do his camp. He and his brother might be in studio with me on Friday, and DeLon's buying a house here.
Yeah.
He's going to spend some of his off season. I thought that I had him on the show during the season. He goes, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm buying a house in Salt Lake. I'm going to spend part of my off season there. That's really cool for a kid that before he got here had no tie to this state, was only here 2 years. He's going to make this, you know, part-time his home.
Well, it's one of the coolest things that I'm finding over time. It's not just obviously for DeLon where you have a lot of choices, but there's a lot of guys that come back and make this home. You know, one of them's living in Park City in Doliac.
Yeah.
You got a bunch of people that I think this community wraps its arms around a lot of the athletes. I know during All-Star break, you know, Jakob had 5 days off, and what did he do? He flew back here. So, you know, there's a lot of great things happening in this community. You know, it's tight-knit. And college, that's what you hope for as a coach, is that some of these guys will return, because then it makes you feel like you've done the right thing.
Did the guys from Team Utah ask you to play in the $1 million tournament with them?
Yeah, the wheelchair division.
Did they need a screen setter and a rebounder?
Yeah, maybe if it could be like the old days where you could just stay on one end of the court and not have to run up and down.
That's pretty cool, though, too. Yeah. You only coached one. Dakari's in that, but Sean Green and Bryant Markson and Tim Drisdom and a bunch of guys that played before. And by the way, all guys that have stayed, a lot of those guys have stayed in this area, too. They were California guys and other stuff, but they've kind of stayed in that area. They had a good run last year, and they're back in it again this year.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It's a great basketball state. Yeah. You know, we talk about, you were asking me off air about the young, there's a lot of great young talent in the state. I think there's a lot of coaches that are envious of where we are. You sit in these AAU events all summer long, and there's different styles of basketball. And I think overall, high school coaching is at a high level in the state. AAU coaches do a nice job, run great sets, play team basketball. It's hard to evaluate a player when you just run up and down, and we call it dribble, pass, and tear, fill in the blank, you know, where it's really hard. Does this kid fit into a system? But in Utah, you get a pretty fair assessment of guys because they're hard-nosed, they play hard, they play the game the right way, and a result of that is a lot of our teams do well. When it gets to the Final Four of a lot of these national events, our guys are representing the state real well, and it even goes into the next generation. When those guys are done, there's a lot of, you know, the summer leagues and the different events that you're talking about, guys stay connected and manage to do pretty well.
Did you watch much of the NBA Finals?
I did. I did. It's, you know, one that's just the two teams. I've got some connections, pretty strong ties to the Warriors, and so it's good basketball. I think everybody was sitting on the edge of their seat waiting for those two teams to collide, and I'm real happy for the guys I know that with the Warriors organization.
I think it just showed how much adding a Kevin Durant and having a healthy Steph Curry this year made a difference. As great as LeBron James was, it wasn't enough to overcome all that talent on that Warriors team.
Yeah, and I think people forget, you know, that it was a little bit flukish, I think, that they didn't win it the year before.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you know, they were Draymond Green doesn't lose his mind and Steph's ankle is somewhat healthy, they might be three in a row for them.
Yeah, and the factor I think that came in, you know, I made a lot of friendly wagers with a lot of people, and well, not just friendly, but I had one bet with my son Ben. He wanted to bet. He loves Cleveland. And what I told him is, you can't put enough value on the didn't win it the year before, the motivation that comes with that, as opposed to trying to defend something that you'd won the year before. And I just think, man, Golden State was on edge. They weren't going to let it happen again. I told Ben that I would give him $100 to apply toward a pair of shoes. And if he lost, he had to give me 5 really good hours of manual labor in the yard. And so I'm gonna make him pay off here pretty soon when he gets back from the Dixie team camp.
Does he love Cleveland or does he love LeBron? Because I could take or leave Cleveland, but I'm a huge LeBron James fan.
Yeah, it's LeBron. Yeah. There's nothing, you know, no disrespect to Cleveland, but there's not a whole lot to love about Cleveland. But you put LeBron on that team, and he's a big Kyrie Irving fan as well, with the crossover and all the stuff he does with the ball. So it was fun. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, it was good, and Golden State just proved they were the absolute best. All right, what are you expecting tomorrow night with the draft? Do you expect Kuz to get picked? Any surprises at the top? Do you think we get big trades. A lot of we always hear about it. You know how this is. You were in it. You always hear about a million trades, and sometimes that happens. Sometimes it doesn't happen. You think we get it tomorrow night?
Well, I think one thing that's happening this year that's not normal is, you know, I think teams are moving players prior to the draft. You see a lot of the big blockbuster trades to know that they've got those assets, and then that's going to dictate where they go in the draft.
Right.
That's one element that you don't always see a whole lot shifting the day, a couple days before the draft. What I think is going to be in record numbers is going to, rather than teams doing trades, they're going to actually be drafting for each other.
Yeah.
And so you'll see somebody get picked with the fifth pick of the draft, and someone will pick the seventh, and then all of a sudden, boom, they're going to be on different teams. So it's probably one of those drafts where there's going to be a heck of a lot of movement after the fact. Hopefully everybody calls their clients and tells them that they're going to be traded, unlike years ago. But no, it's going to be good. I think Kuz is going to go somewhere in the end of the first round. That's my gut feeling.
That would be fantastic.
24 to 30, somewhere in there.
You always have those weird pictures, too. You're drafted by the Mavericks, and you're wearing the Mavericks hat, and that's your draft night picture, when in actuality, you're going to play for the Bucks.
Yeah, that's where Photoshop comes in.
That's exactly right. You can Photoshop all that. Have fun. I know you guys are done with camps for a while. You're going to be off recruiting in July, but well, schedule, next couple of days, you think, on the schedule?
Yeah, we're just waiting for one contract to be finalized. And, we've got a difficult schedule. I'll just tell you that. We'll probably be in the top, 15, 20 in the country in terms of biting off a little bit more than is normal. But nice marquee home game. I think everybody can do the math. We return the Butler game. We're going to be in Vegas playing a couple games on a neutral site. So get to go down south and play BYU. And
yep.
Then we'll play Utah State at the Beehive Classic, which everybody knows. And then we're in up to our eyeballs with the Pac-12 play.
Should be fun. So you're waiting on one contract, kind of a perhaps a marquee game, huh?
Yeah, it's a marquee game.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
You'll like it.
All right. I may or may not have an idea of who it is, but my lips are sealed.
Yeah.
That's Larry Krystkowiak. Hey, have fun. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Billy. Thanks, man.
Got to take a break. We're done. Gunther and Hackett coming up next. Back tomorrow with Draft Day Edition. Morgan Scalley, Chad Ford. We'll see if Chad Ford agrees with Larry. And maybe Kuz jumps into the first round. We'll do that tomorrow on the Bill Riley Show here on ESPN 700.